All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Allen. To my right is Judge Meredith. To my left is Judge Falvey. And we're here today to consider arguments in the matter of Pablo R. Martinez versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 215284. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, enter your appearances for the record?
April Donahauer of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick on behalf of Mr. Martinez. With me at counsel table is Zachary Stoltz, also of the firm.
Good morning, Secretary. Thank you. And Ms. Donahauer, I understand you want to reserve some time for rebuttal.
10 minutes, please, Your Honor.
All right, we've made that happen, and you can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. The board ruled that when a written withdrawal is facially valid and unambiguous, the claimant's lack of understanding of the consequences of the withdrawal is irrelevant. That was error. When Mr. Martinez withdrew his appeal for TDIU in February 2010, he got lost traveling to familiar destinations and could not remember three common nouns after 2 minutes. On the same day, he both withdrew TDIU and resubmitted an application for that benefit. Against the backdrop of his cognitive dysfunction, these actions were enough to cast doubt on Mr. Martinez's understanding of his actions, and enough to cast doubt on whether he understood that his actions would involve giving up several years of back pay. As Mr. Martinez argued to the board, his lack of understanding mattered. And because this evidence related to his lack of understanding at the time of the withdrawal, it also mattered. The court should hold that evidence of cognitive dysfunction is facially relevant to a claimant's lack of understanding of the consequences of withdrawal and remand for the board to consider that evidence as is required under 7104A.
So could I ask a question to so I'm going to set this up as what I understand the legal framework to be, which may not be what the legal framework is, but it's where I am, right? So we have Hembree, which says that to be valid, the written withdrawal has to comply with the regulation.
Yes.
We leave open the fact in Hembree that there could be something that happened after that moment that would cast doubt enough on the claimant's understanding of what's going on that it would, you know, like be inquiry notice in some other context. As to that part, I see this in two steps, which is first, what would be sufficient to raise the issue for the board? And then if it's raised, then how does the board assess whether or not the evidence actually showed a lack of understanding? Is that sort of in a nutshell how you see the law as?
Yes, that's consistent with our understanding, Your Honor.
So, but what do we do then with the cognitive issue that you've raised? Because it doesn't seem that that was even remotely alluded to below. And unlike the TDIU sequence that you've described, right, withdrawing it and seeking the higher benefit that leads to the application, right, which is just, it isn't going to happen in every case. There are lots and lots and lots of cases where people are going to have cognitive issues. And so I'm somewhat troubled that your failure to raise anything about the cognitive issue means we'd have to then to rule in your favor on that point. Would have to say that that is sufficient to, in my step, raise the issue for the board to discuss it. So if you could respond to that, because cognitive issues are not going to be uncommon.
Certainly, Your Honor, and several responses to that. The first, to Your Honor's concern about raising the issue, I would respectfully disagree. I believe it was sufficient that on page 29 of the record, Mr. Martinez raised a question or raised the issue of his understanding of the consequences of his withdrawal. As we argued in the motion for reconsideration and in our reply, the evidence of the cognitive dysfunction related to that argument, and under the case law on issue exhaustion, it's not a new legal argument being raised for the first time, and the veteran's interest is always served by looking at evidence to support an argument that was already raised below.
So are you then taking the position that we wouldn't have to address whether cognitive impairment evidence was sufficient to raise the issue, reasonably raised by the record, because your position is your client raised the cognitive impairment question expressly?
Our position is that Mr. Martinez raised his lack of understanding of the consequences of the withdrawal below. The cognitive disorder evidence is evidence relevant to his subjective understanding. So the issue here is lack of understanding.
But, okay, fair enough. Let me try again. So it sounded to me like what you just said then is once I say as a claimant, there's evidence about the fact that I didn't understand what I was doing. At that point, your argument is, even if the claimant doesn't say to the board anything about cognitive impairment, the board having been told, I didn't understand, right? I'm shorthanding, the board would be required to look at any possible cause that could relate to that.
The board would be required to look at evidence that's relevant to a lack of understanding, and certainly cognitive dysfunction is relevant to a lack of understanding of the consequences of one's actions. And I think the court in the Federal Circuit in Acree, and I believe Your Honor yourself has recognized this in the Shoemaker oral argument, the court in Acree pointed to the importance of assuring veterans' understanding. And I preface this by saying I realize Acree is not on point here because we're not talking about an oral withdrawal. But Acree talked about cognitive dysfunctioning and psychiatric disability as being a critical consideration because so many veterans are afflicted with psychiatric disability and cognitive dysfunction. And in the pro-veteran system, it's important to assure that those veterans understand the consequences of their actions. I believe I've addressed Your Honor's question, but let me know if I'm mistaken.
No, you have. I mean, you know, part of my concern with the board's decision here is all of these questions that the parties have now debated are to me interesting questions. I've heard the argument several times, Shoemaker, Hembree, now here. But the board's decision is odd because in large portions of it, it seems to have adopted a vision of Hembree that, to me, doesn't comport with the law, and I'm just struggling what to do with that because I'm not sure we can reach, for me, lots of these other issues because I'm not sure the board did, but I'll let you go on.
And that reminds me of another point I wanted to make, Your Honor, which is that the board rejected out of hand the legal argument that subjective understanding is relevant at all here. So there's no reason to believe that regardless of what evidence had been specifically pointed to, that it would have changed the outcome here. The board said it's spatially valid, it's unambiguous, end of inquiry.
And I'm going to ask one more question, then I'm going to get out of your way, I promise. I don't know if you have the board decision in front of you. Okay, so it's page 8 of the board decision, but it's record page 12. I'd just like to get your reaction to this, okay, which is that you know, the board talks about the withdrawal issue in Hembree over 3 to 4 pages, depending on how you count where it begins. But there's one paragraph that begins, even if. Okay? Are you with me? It's the first full paragraph on the page?
Yes.
At least, theoretically, that paragraph could be one that could allow somebody to say, well, the board's misstatement of what the law was actually isn't prejudicial here because it said even if and then went on. I think there's a lot to say about this paragraph, but I'd just be interested in your take on the even if paragraph.
Absolutely. And we did discuss this because it appears as if it's an alternative holding, if you will.
That's exactly.
Yes. Right. But I don't believe that it is really more than paying lip service to the four corners of the argument on page 29 of the record. I think the board had already rejected out of hand the notion that lack of subjective understanding is relevant, and then went on to superficially address the arguments, but only within the four corners of the 2021 argument to the board. And that's all that's discussed in this paragraph. Because the board really was just assuming this for argument's sake and didn't truly believe that the evidence of lack of understanding was relevant, there's no consideration of anything other than the verbatim language from that argument. So I still don't think that the board made the requisite factual findings for a finding of harmless error here, because it didn't address all the relevant evidence on the cognitive dysfunction and the lack of understanding issue.
Thanks.
If I can jump in there. In response to your motion for panel, the secretary has contended that the appellant has only argued that cognitive difficulties might have impacted the 2010 withdrawal. Can you clarify for us, is the appellant's position that it did, in fact, his cognitive difficulties did, in fact, impact the 2010 withdrawal, or are you just suggesting it's a possibility?
The argument is that it's facially relevant to whether Mr. Martinez understood his action, and that requires board fact-finding on that question, Your Honor.
So have you asked your client if it impacted his withdrawal in 2010, the cognitive difficulties that are apparent from the record?
Our conversations with Mr. Martinez have largely been consistent with what's reflected in the record, Your Honor, which is that his understanding is tenuous.
So you argued that with page 29 of the record, where appellants through counsel suggested that there was not a full understanding. It was in response to the 2020 board decision that suggested that there was no evidence of a lack of understanding. Even if that raised the issue of whether your client understood the 2010 withdrawal, is there anything in the record itself that connects the dots between cognitive difficulties and the 2010 withdrawal? Is there anything that suggests that there's a connection between the two?
I think there is, Your Honor, and that's that a person who gets lost on the way to familiar destinations, who has had a year of problems thinking and processing information, at the same time takes two actions on the same day that essentially contradict each other, I think draws the connection there, that there was something.
There's nothing in the record itself. It's the inferences that
there's not a there's not a medical opinion. There's not a medical opinion saying that this claimant didn't understand, but there is facially relevant evidence that required an adjudicator at the agency to make factual findings.
So to follow up on something Judge Allen was asking about, are you suggesting that any time that there's evidence in the record of cognitive difficulties, that the board would have to look behind a written withdrawal to see if there was a full understanding?
I think the timing matters, Your Honor, and the timing here is such that there were increasingly severe cognitive difficulties up to and including the time that Mr. Martinez took these actions. I could see a scenario in which the cognitive difficulties are so distant in time from the actions that they would arguably not be relevant, but those aren't our facts here.
In your pleadings, you had suggested that it was the 2010 reapplication for TDIU in March of 2010, coupled with the evidence of cognitive disabilities that may have reasonably raised this issue. Are you now suggesting that it was the cognitive disabilities alone that could have raised it, given the, or it is still the two coupled together that raises the issue in your view?
So Mr. Martinez raised the issue of his lack of understanding in the 2021 90-day response. And it's the evidence of the cognitive difficulties together with his actions at the time, his inconsistent actions, that the board was required to discuss in addressing that argument.
So if we were to agree with the board or find there's a plausible basis for the board's finding, essentially that in resubmitting a claim for TDIU in March of 2010, the appellant was responding to the RO's request for a new form in connection with a new claim. If we thought that had a plausible basis in the record, how does that impact your contentions?
I think finding a plausible basis would require fact-finding that the board didn't do in the first instance. And I think also in response to that question, the board itself found that what Mr. Martinez submitted on the same day as the withdrawal of TDIU encompassed TDIU. So it's not just the March submission. He, on the same day, withdrew and asserted entitlement to the same benefit.
A veteran service organization.
Yes. Just to briefly touch on the regulation here, Your Honors, the regulation sets forth what's required for a facially valid written withdrawal, and we would submit that creates, in essence, a presumption of validity when the written withdrawal complies with the regulation, but when there is something in the record to raise it or an affirmative argument to raise the claimant's lack of understanding, that presumption of validity, in essence, goes away, and the board has to look at all of the evidence that's relevant to the asserted lack of understanding.
If we were going to rule in your favor, what would you suggest the instruction on remand to be?
The instruction would be a rule that evidence of cognitive dysfunction at the time of a withdrawal is facially relevant to the claimant's subjective understanding of the consequences, and that under 7104A, the board has to discuss that evidence.
So I know this is counterfactual and against what you're arguing, but just roll with me for a second. Let's just assume for a moment that there was no evidence of cognitive impairment here at all. Okay, yes, and I see the light went on, so you can answer my question. Assume that there's no evidence of cognitive impairment, so this is simply not in the case. But we have the same thing where there is the withdrawal of TDIU. Let's just assume it isn't PTSD, it's some other condition, okay? That then a higher rating is sought in the same day, and we have the whole rest of the sequence there, right? Do you come out the same way, or is the cognitive impairment piece just a critically important part of this for you? Do you see what I'm asking?
I think I do, and I think taking all of the facts to be equal, I think there was still board error here. And I think there was still prejudicial board error here because the inconsistent actions alone, I believe, raised a question here. And certainly they raised a question when you look at what Mr. Martinez was going through at the time.
Right. And I do understand. I've got that argument.
Yes.
Right? But what I need is if we strip away the cognitive impairment question, whether we do that because it's just too prevalent in the system, or we do it because we assume, we conclude that it wasn't sufficiently flagged for the board, and standing alone, it wasn't good enough. Let's just assume that, right? Do you need that to win here or not?
No. It certainly helps, but no. And the reason why we don't need it is because the board erred in saying that a facially valid and unambiguous withdrawal is the end of the inquiry, because there was at least some inconsistent action here, and there was an affirmative argument by Mr. Martinez that he lacked full understanding.
And then that would lead to whether or not the, quote, even if paragraph is a good enough analysis in the alternative or not. Fair to say that that would then be the question?
Could you rephrase that, Your Honor?
Yeah, so if we took the even if paragraph out of the decision, then it would be easy to say the board had this understanding of Hembree and it would never look to subjective understanding under any circumstance, okay? But we have the even if paragraph. So if we say that the board made an error because it misunderstood Hembree, then, and we even take the cognitive stuff out of the mix, so it's not error to not talk about that, we're then left with the even if paragraph that does say, even if we're wrong, here it is. In my sort of scorecard of the world, that paragraph would say, is the error that the board had made that I've just described harmless or not, right? And that would focus us on the even if paragraph. I mean, are you analytically there? You've explained to me why you don't think it's good enough. But analytically, you agree that's what the paragraph would be about then in that case.
Yes. And I would reiterate that it was insufficient.
Judge Meredith, do you have anything? Judge Falvey, do you have
anything?
All right, thank you. We'll give you your full rebuttal time. Mr. Kaufman?
May it please the court. The general rule from Hembree is that when a veteran submits something in writing, VA may presume that he means what he says. And nothing about this appeal supports a deviation from that rule. The only disagreement here is a factual one about whether the record reasonably raised the theory that appellant was so cognitively impaired in February 2010 that he could not understand his written withdrawal.
Do you agree, though, that there are parts of the board's decision where it seems to state a rule of law that is much more concrete than Hembree?
I believe in the earlier parts of the decision, the board was simply restating the rule from Hembree.
So the board said on this is record page 10, I'm not trying to trip you up, right, says, this is in the final paragraph on the page about a middle of the way down. It says, after quoting Hembree, it says, well, the court stated that there may be circumstances that call into question the propriety of a written withdrawal. This case is not one of them because the withdrawal was unambiguous on its face, right? So my point being, you'd agree with me that under Hembree, if a withdrawal is ambiguous on its face, it doesn't satisfy the regulation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. The way I read the sentence that I just described to you, right, is The board says, well, the court says some circumstances may call into question the propriety of the withdrawal. This isn't one of them because it's unambiguous. My point being, if that were the rule, you'd never get to the question that Hembree left open.
That's right, Aaron, but the question would have to have been raised by the record, and here the record doesn't reasonably raise.
I'm taking tiny little baby steps, right? As I get older, that's how I walk. So the first step is that rule, the way the board has described that rule, it seems to me, can't be right. It can't be that if the withdrawal itself is unambiguous, you'd never look beyond it. Because if it's unambiguous, Hembree tells you that the withdrawal has to be unambiguous. But then we left open the question about other evidence may be calling into question the understanding of the claimant, right? So just on that narrow point, it seems to me the board had a very narrow view of Hembree. I believe you're correct, Your Honor, that was a narrow view of Hembree. I don't think it was a misstatement of the rule.
Okay,
that's fair enough. That's fair enough. You can go on.
Neither appellant nor the record raised the theory about his cognitive impairment, and thus the board was not required to address it. As such, the general rule from Hembree controls, and the board did not have to second-guess appellant's unambiguous withdrawal or inquire further into his subjective understanding of the effects of the withdrawal. Importantly, there's no legal question in dispute in this case. The parties agree that Section 19.55 does not abrogate the board's obligation under Section 7104 to consider the record in its entirety.
So what is, I'll take you at your word that there's not a legal question. I don't think that's right, but let's just assume that is, okay? What then is the factual question before us?
The factual question is whether the record reasonably raised this theory about his cognitive impairment and his lack of understanding, and that would go into the door that the court left open in Hembree.
Okay, so you agree with the board and me, I'll tell you, that the withdrawal itself is unambiguous, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so then under the board's reasoning, doesn't that end the analysis? Because the board said, well, the court stated that there may be circumstances that call into question the propriety of a written withdrawal. This case is not one of them because the withdrawal was unambiguous on its face. Right? So if that's right, then we're just absolutely done, right?
Well, again, Your Honor, in Hembree, the court did leave open this possibility of sometimes looking beyond the four corners of the withdrawal.
Right, and the board, my point just being, right, is it seems to me that the board didn't understand Hembree that way because it wrote that the withdrawal is unambiguous. Therefore, the rule in Hembree doesn't apply. My only point, you still have many ways to win this appeal, okay, for the secretary, right? I just need to get the secretary's position. What the board said there on page 10, that is not the secretary's understanding of Hembree, right?
But that is a narrower statement of the rule from Hembree. And again, here, the board did make other factual findings about...
Right, I don't mean to harp on this. But what the board said that I've read you on page 12 at 10 and what you've said, those two things can't simultaneously exist,
yes,
right?
That's correct, Your Honor, because as the court in Hembree held, the board might sometimes need to look beyond the four corners.
Perfect, and that's where I wanted you to go next, right? Which is then what we'd have to say, right, is that the board's error in stating Hembree's rule too concretely, my word, okay, is harmless because of something else the board did, right?
It would be harmless both because the record here did not raise the theory about the cognitive impairment and also because the board did make a separate factual finding that there was no evidence in the record that appellant did not understand his written withdrawal.
Right, so skipping over the first point for a second, the cognitive impairment point, because I understand why you're talking about it, because it's a big focus on the appellant side, right? Let's just assume again, like I asked your friend on the other side, to just forget about cognitive impairment for a moment, okay? I want the secretary's view also on what I call the even if paragraph on page 12, right? Because, again, assume that it's not problematic that there's no mention of cognitive impairment. Just assume that is off the table. Is the even if paragraph sufficient to say, even if the board made a legal error by stating the rule in Hembree too narrowly, the error here is not harmful because of what the board did in the even if paragraph?
Yes, Your Honor, the finding on that page 12 of the record in the even if paragraph is enough for the board to have made a finding that again, there's no evidence of a lack of understanding and no evidence that the subsequent application for TDIU was meant to rescind the written withdrawal.
And we could make that determination based on the even if paragraph itself without making any factual, and this is a true question, without making any factual determinations that would then put us afoul of the Federal Circuit in Tadlock.
No, Your Honor, because the board did make a factual finding here. It said the record doesn't show a lack of understanding. And in fact, for you to upset that finding, you would have to conclude that it was there's no plausible basis for it in the record.
Well, the board would still have to have supported that finding with adequate reasons or bases, right?
That's correct.
And so what I'm saying is there's enough in the Secretary's view in the even if, I'm calling it the even if paragraph, okay? In the even if paragraph to allow us to say, even though, just assume with me this point, even though the board had an incorrect legal view, it looked at the evidence through the incorrect legal lens, meaning it had a much more firm rule on Hembree, okay? The even if paragraph provides enough reasoning for us to say that error was harmless without us making any factual determinations ourselves.
That's correct, Your Honor. Appellant's own submissions support the position that the record did not reasonably raise the theory about cognitive impairment. In their March 2021 brief to the board, appellant's current attorneys did not advance an argument about his cognitive functioning and his understanding of the withdrawal. Instead, they argued that the closeness in time between the February 2010 withdrawal and the application for TDIU that appellant submitted in response to the March 2010 rating decision cast doubt on his understanding of the effects of the withdrawal. And earlier, in their January 2019 submission to the board, appellant's attorneys made a different argument that the subsequent March 2010 TDIU application should be read as a request to rescind the withdrawal. But as we've discussed, the board addressed these arguments and plausibly found that there is no evidence that appellant did not understand his withdrawal, and it also plausibly found that the March 2010 application for TDIU did not indicate a desire to undo the withdrawal. Unless the court is persuaded the board clearly erred here in these factual findings, they cannot upset them.
You just used the term undo the withdrawal, and it strikes me that the withdrawal is something that cannot be undone. We're not talking about rescinding something. We're talking instead about a withdrawal or an action that is void for some reason. You're not undoing the withdrawal. You're going through some sort of process to determine whether or not it was valid. And as Ms. Donahar argued, in a sense, if you have the written withdrawal, it's presumptively valid unless expressly or the record reasonably raises the question or raises questions undermining that incapacity, something like that, that says that withdrawal was not valid, right? I just want to try to have a correct understanding. We're not talking about rescinding a withdrawal.
That's correct, Your Honor. Appellant's attorneys did make an argument that the subsequent application for TDIU in March 2010 should be read as a request to rescind the withdrawal. That was the argument they advanced in January of 2019. This is not to say that the board never needs to look beyond the four corners of a written withdrawal, but as the court reiterated in Hembree, the board only needs to address theories that are reasonably raised by the record. And if, as it is now argued, the record so clearly raised the theory that appellant's cognitive impairment made him unable to understand the effects of the withdrawal such that the board was required to address that theory, appellant's attorneys should have raised it themselves to the board.
What's the authority for that proposition that we can look outside the four corners?
That was the part of the holding in Hembree, Your Honor.
Well, we said we're not going to answer that question. Perhaps the answer to that question is no, we can't. You have a valid, unambiguous written waiver. You live with it.
Well, the court did leave open the door to that possibility in Hembree.
I think more left open the question rather than left open the possibility. So I'm kind of going back to the beginning. What's the answer to that question, and what's the authority for that question?
Well, to the extent that there is a rule here, it would be the rule from Robinson. Under 7104, the board needs to address the entirety of the record that's relevant and address theories that are reasonably raised by the record. And if there is some evidence that reasonably raises the lack of understanding, then the board would have to address that evidence.
So that goes back to your argument that 7104 and the regulation work in harmony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But could I follow up with Judge Fowley's question? Hembree did not answer the question. I'm pretty confident that it didn't. It left open the issue, right? And the Secretary's counsel in Hembree, and I can't remember which of your colleagues it was, I'm sorry, but basically agreed that there could be something that would happen that would call into question the, we can call it validity, we can call it effectiveness, whatever, the I'll use validity, but I'll put it in quotes, of the withdrawal, okay? Does the Secretary, after reflection, continue to believe that there are circumstances that could require the board to assess a subjective understanding of a claimant, even in a situation in which a written withdrawal complies with the regulation?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is the same as it was at oral argument in Hembree, that there might be facts that raise the lack of understanding such that the board is required to address those facts. But the facts here.
And right, that's what is the intermediate step. Like, you have the withdrawal, you have something that raises the requirement to address it, whether it's expressly raised or by the record, and then the final step is, and then that evidence could, in the Secretary's view, under some circumstances, quote, undo the withdrawal?
Yes, Your Honor. If such circumstances were reasonably raised by the record, then as part of its obligation under 7104, the board would need to address it, but it only needs to address such a theory if it's reasonably raised by the record under Robinson.
And so to go back to what Judge Felvey asked, right, your basis for saying why that's the law, right, because it agrees with appellant, right, that there are this, is Robinson and 7104, is that, I just want to make sure.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay.
What sorts of circumstances would reasonably raise this question or reasonably raise inquiry by the board?
Well, again, Your Honor, there's not a bright line rule or a single fact that would automatically raise it. It is more the totality of the evidence, in the same way that it's the same test from Robinson.
Okay. And the focus, though, is at the moment of withdrawal, right? Well, that's when we're looking at circumstances that surround the withdrawal.
That's correct, Your
so
Honor.
So if someone became cognitively impaired 2 months after the withdrawal, that wouldn't raise it.
Not necessarily, Your
but
Honor.
If there was evidence that before, leading up to moment of the withdrawal,
it may well, Your
it
Honor.
It may.
But those are not the facts here. And in fact, the facts here indicate that appellant was actively participating in the development of his claim by filing a new claim for an increased rating for PTSD, withdrawing his pending appeal for TDIU. Later in the month of February, he attended a VA examination at which he was deemed competent to manage his VA benefits. And then in response to the March 2010 rating decision that granted a higher rating for PTSD, appellant then submitted an application for a new application for TDIU.
Could I just make sure I understand something in the answer to Judge Fowley's questions? So the relevant time is that, meaning the understanding that we might have to look into some circumstances is the moment in time at which the appeal is withdrawn, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, that's how I understood your answer to Judge Fowler, but then I just want to make sure, though. But you're not saying that something that happens after the moment of withdrawal couldn't actually shed light on the moment of withdrawal, are you?
No, again, Your Honor, it would depend on the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, so I think in Hembree, I used an example like this. You know, on day number one, claimant files something that says, I withdraw my appeal for service connection for PTSD. And on day number two, he or she writes in and says, hey, now that I've submitted that document yesterday, when can I expect to get my check for my service connection? Right? That's temporarily later than the withdrawal, but it seems weird.
That's correct, Your Honor. Such a submission could raise the issue, but that kind of submission or phone call to the RO might resolve with the appellant being reminded that he had withdrawn his claim, and he might be satisfied with that. So it does depend on the kind of entirety of the record.
Right. I'm just thinking this, you know, if we write an opinion, no matter how the result comes out here, that answers the Hembree question by saying, no, board, you know, there are situations in which you have to look, the more guidance we could give the board in how you sort of try to put your hands around that, the better. And so if we were to say you can only look at evidence that predated the withdrawal, well, that's one thing. If we say, no, the relevant time is the withdrawal, but the evidence could be before or after, right? Those are two different things. That's what I'm trying to probe here. I understand your position about this case, but, of course, if we write an opinion, it's going to bind the board in, you know, all of the 100,000 cases a year.
Yes, Your Honor. And to the extent that there is a rule, it's the same rule from Robinson. The board needs to address theories that are reasonably raised by the record. And this is familiar territory for the court. The court regularly reviews board decisions to determine whether something was reasonably raised and whether there was error and the board's not addressing it.
On that issue of whether the issue, sir, we have finished answering, Judge Allen?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the issue of whether cognitive difficulties was reasonably raised, you mentioned the appellant's March 2021 argument that was submitted to the VA through his attorneys. And in the portion of that argument dealing with the earlier effective date and whether the withdrawal was valid, there's no mention of cognitive disabilities. But then later in that argument, in talking about whether the appellant would have been entitled to extra scheduler TIU, counsel does mention that he had difficulty thinking and processing information. It's page 31 of the record. Does that weigh for or against a finding that the issue of cognitive disabilities was reasonably raised? Where they mentioned cognitive disabilities, but in talking about extra scheduler TDIU, not in talking about whether the withdrawal was valid.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if this theory was so reasonably raised by the record about his cognitive impairment, then appellant's attorney should have raised it themselves to the board when they had the opportunity to do so. And the fact that they didn't raise it as a theory strongly undermines their current position.
That goes to whether the issue was expressly raised, not whether it was reasonably raised.
That's correct. But the fact that appellant's attorneys who have been representing this claimant for several years didn't raise this theory until they got to the court does undermine their current contention that it was so obviously raised by the record that the board was required to address it.
So I'm going to change directions for just a minute. In February 2010, the appellant submitted the document that we've been talking about, the withdrawal. The next day, VA sent him a letter saying, we received your withdrawal. If this was not your intent, and it says, contact us immediately, you can write or call. That letter doesn't provide any parameters on when the appellant needed to contact VA or what he needed to say. So how do you gauge whether the actions that he took after that in filing the claim for increase for PTSD and filing the application for TDIU, are those contacts, did he immediately contact VA about the issue? How do you gauge whether those contacts suffice when VA didn't give him any parameters on what he needed to say or when he needed to say it?
Well, it's significant, Your Honor, that appellant didn't respond to that letter at all.
How do you know that? You didn't tell him what he needed to say.
Well, there was no communication that indicated that he didn't understand the withdrawal or that he intended to withdraw, that he didn't mean the withdrawal.
That's my, to follow up, that's my even-if point question of the paragraph, right? Because we did get a submission about TDIU within about a month, right? So we're not talking years later, right? The board's paragraph says only post hoc rationalizations 9 years later, but the events happened, right? And so to follow up on Judge Meredith's question, would it require fact-finding for us to say there was a letter that VA sent the day after the withdrawal that provided, if you don't understand or if you want more information to us, tell us, didn't provide parameters. And so even though within a month we now get an application for the benefit for the appeal that was withdrawn, that has no connection to one versus another. And that may not be Judge Meredith's question, but that's mine, which is how do we make that factual connection?
Well, in fact, Your Honor, the board did make a factual finding that the March 2010 application for TDIU was submitted in response to the prompting by the RO in the March 2010 rating decision that granted the increased rating for PTSD. And again, the context here is important because between February and March 2010, the landscape had changed in an important way in that appellant was granted a higher rating for PTSD, and thus he was eligible under 4.16A to entitlement to TDIU on a scheduler basis. So the board did make a specific finding that the subsequent application for TDIU was submitted in response to the RO's prompting. Returning to the facts here, appellant's attorneys fault the board for not considering a theory that he and his attorneys failed to raise. Again, that's not dispositive on that question, but it does strongly undermine their current contention that the record reasonably raised the theory and that the board was required to address it. Importantly, appellant's current contention about his cognitive impairment relies entirely on his attorneys reading more into the medical records than is apparent on the face of those records. They assert that the diagnosis of a cognitive impairment and symptoms of memory trouble with self-reported symptoms of difficulty thinking and processing information equate to a lack of understanding. But none of the VA examiners or providers drew such a conclusion, and in fact, they appear to have drawn the opposite conclusion. At the February 2010 VA examination, appellant was deemed competent to manage his VA benefits. The examiner concluded that appellant was capable of managing his financial affairs and was competent to prudently handle his VA benefits. And the next month, on March 26, 2010, a VA provider observed that appellant had symptoms of memory problems and reported trouble thinking and processing information. But the provider also concluded, quote, "It became clearly obvious that he, meaning appellant, is able to read and comprehend things within normal limits." So appellant is asking the court to find error in the board's not reading into those documents, which again said that he's competent to manage his funds and is able to comprehend things within normal limits, as indicating a lack of understanding of the withdrawal. The board is considered to have presumed the entire record, and absent clear evidence to the contrary, the court must therefore presume that it considered appellant's cognitive condition and his symptoms of memory loss and found that they did not warrant mention. The court should reject appellant's attorney's attempts to read more into the medical records than is apparent on the face of those records. The court does not need to break any new ground here. There is no requirement that the board invent and reject every conceivable argument in order to produce a valid decision, and this case presents a straightforward application of the rule from Hembree, and the board did not have to second-guess appellant's unambiguous request to withdraw his appeal. As such, the secretary asked the court to affirm the board's decision.
So essentially, a panel is not required, and my single judge decision now withdrawn. Got it right?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
Wow.
No,
nice recognizing that Judge Salvi pitches softball sometimes, so thank you very much to Secretary's counsel. Ms. Donahue?
Please, the court. Two reasons why Tadlock should not lead to affirmance here, going back to Judge Allen's discussion of the even if paragraph on page 12. The first, I think, opposing counsel has set up nicely, which is that at the very least, there's some factual questions raised by the evidence of the cognitive disorder at the time that Mr. Martinez withdrew his appeal. The second reason comes from page 5 of the board's decision, where it makes the favorable factual finding that on the same day in February 2010, Mr. Martinez withdrew his appeal of entitlement to TDIU and submitted a claim that included TDIU. But if you look at the even if paragraph on page 12, that's not addressed. Those two conflicting actions on the same day are not addressed in that paragraph. So regardless of what the board said about the March 2010 filing, we have no fact findings on the significance of those two actions in February. The second point is to Judge Falvey's question, and I think it's one that's been lurking under all of these cases, which is why it's even a live issue whether a claimant doesn't understand the consequences of a withdrawal when there's a facially valid written withdrawal. And that is that, as we would agree with what the Secretary has said in the oral arguments in both Hembree and Shoemaker, as we noted in the opening brief, that when there is a waiver of some kind of right, longstanding case law says that that waiver needs to be with full understanding of its consequences, particularly in a system that's benefactory to veterans and in which it's proclaimant at every step of the way.
So then you see the difference between the, I'm going to call it Hembree and Delisio or Acri, that you, from what you just said, it seems to me your position is that any withdrawal, written, oral, whatever, has to have full understanding. The difference is if it's an oral withdrawal, VA has an obligation in every single situation to ensure that there is full understanding. Whereas if it's a written withdrawal and it complies with the regulation, VA only has to look into full understanding if the issue is either raised or reasonably raised by the record?
Correct.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, Your Honors, we would ask the court to vacate the board's decision and remand for the board to consider whether Mr. Martinez had a full understanding of the consequences of his withdrawal based on all of the relevant evidence.
I just have a follow-up question. Judge Meredith pointed to page 31 of your 90-day letter that discusses cognitive impairment. I haven't seen where you have pointed to that language previously as going to the withdrawal question. It's in the section after the withdrawal discussion in that letter, but it does discuss cognitive impairment. What are we to make of that discussion?
It certainly does, Your Honor, and specifically the March 2010 evidence that Mr. Martinez had been having problems for some time prior to the date of the withdrawal. And I would dispute opposing counsel's assertion that the board is somehow able to put blinders on to that evidence because it falls in another section of the argument. I think that reassertion of that evidence was certainly enough to place it before the board in the same document in which Mr. Martinez argued about his understanding. On a related point, There was no fishing expedition required to find this evidence of cognitive impairment, and in fact, it was expressly raised to the board as early as May 2015. Again, it was on the merits of entitlement to benefits, which I think is in essence, bound up with the question of the withdrawal. But in that May 2015 JMR, that's in 14-4268, a prior appeal. We'd ask the court to take judicial notice of that. The evidence of the March 2010 findings of cognitive impairment was raised to the board at that time. So it's long been within the board's field of view.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank all parties for the very helpful arguments. Also, it's great to see so many people in the courtroom at one time. Hopefully, we can keep that going. And with that, the case is submitted, and we'll come down and greet counsel.